In the book of 1 Chronicles, we find chapter after chapter of genealogy. If you've ever read the Bible through cover to cover, I know you've gone through it, and it's probably the part where you more or less kind of skim just to get through it real quick, just to, you know, well, I read it, but let's turn over there and look at that for a minute. 1 Chronicles, chapter 1, verse 1. We can even find the book of 1 Chronicles. As I said, there's a lot of genealogy here, and at times you might think, well, why is all this in here, and what is this? But 1 Chronicles 1, starting in verse 1, we're reading down through verse 5, we read, Adam, Seth, Enosh, Canaan, Mahalalel, Jared, Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The sons of Japheth were Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tumul, Meshech, and Tiraz. This goes on and on for the first 9 chapters of the book of 1 Chronicles without giving us too much information about any one of the particular individuals. Go ahead and turn over to chapter 2. 1 Chronicles chapter 2. Again, it starts out verse 1. These were the sons of Israel: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Joseph, Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. The sons of Judah were Onan, and Shelah. These three were born to him by the daughter of Shua the Canaanitess. The firstborn of Judah, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, so he killed him. So here we're given a little bit of an insight into one of these characters, and that is but this is just a reiteration of the information given in Genesis 38 and verse 7. Let's continue on, 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Now these were the sons of David who were born unto him in Hebron. The first was Amnon by Ahinoam, the Jezreelites. I practiced these, believe it or not. The second, Daniel by Abigail the Carmelites. The third, Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, king of Geshur. The fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith. And the fifth, Shephathiah by Abital, the sixth, Ethereum by his wife Eglah. Again, many names, very little information. You know, when we were thinking of having kids, I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun to go through some of these names and try to find an original name for your kid, and then you start going through these and you're like, yeah, I'm not using any of these. Chapter 4 starts out pretty much the same way. 1 Chronicles 4, starting in verse 1. The sons of Judah were Perez, Hezron, Carmi, Hur, and Shobal, and Reiah, the son of Shobal, begot Jahath, and Jahath begot Ahumai, and Lahad, and these were the families of the Zohorites. These were the sons of the father of Etam, Jezreel, Ishma, and Idbash. And the name of their sister was Hezalopuni. Okay, if I keep reading these genealogy accounts, if I keep going through this for 9 chapters, I wouldn't blame you if you sort of sat there and your eyes start glazing over and you start thinking of, you know, where are you going to go eat this afternoon, or what did you have for breakfast this morning, or anything like that, or maybe even if you fell asleep. It would be understandable. This just doesn't really make for good reading. But here, in this, what's probably one of the least read books of the Bible, in one of the probably least read portions of one of the least read books of the Bible, there's a story, a little nugget that we can learn from. Right in the middle of all these names, we're told something about someone who isn't even listed here because of the genealogy. At least it doesn't say that he was a son of somebody or anything like that. It just kind of, his name just pops out. This story of this man's life just appears. And it really seems out of place, and it could easily be passed over without much thought. And I'm sure that those of you who have, you know, read the Bible cover to cover may have just gone right over this and not even paid that much attention to it, because your mind's already another name, another name, another name. But this is something that we should look at. I want us to look at this right now. This little nugget is inserted here, verses 9 and 10 of chapter 4. 1 Chronicles 4, verses 9 and 10. This is the story of a man named Jabez. And just like most of the names listed in this chapter, we're not given very much information about him. But it is a story worth looking at. Let's read this little interruption of this long list of names. 1 Chronicles 4, starting in verse 9. Now Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, "Because I have bore him in pain." And Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me, and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain." So God granted him what he requested. That is the story of Jabez. Uh-huh. That's all we know about him. But there's a lot here that we can learn from. First of all, his name. The name Jabez means pain or sorrow. His mother, having named him this because she bore him in pain, that is in Jabez. She bore him in Jabez, so she named him Jabez. A literal translation would be that he would cause pain. Could you imagine your mother giving you such a name? You know, she's introducing her family. She says, "This is my son Joe. This is my son Bill. This is my daughter Sunshine. And this is my son, the one that will cause pain." Could you imagine having that as a name? What would have motivated a mother to give her child such a name? I mean, it's a newborn baby. You can think of all the emotions that you have when the baby is there. Why would your thoughts be, "I'm going to name him someone who causes pain"? It must have been more than the common physical pain of childbirth. She'd been through this before. All children cause pain at childbirth. So I'm told. I'll take your word for it. Maybe he could have been a very difficult birth. Maybe he was breached. Maybe it was, you know, the worst childbirth she's ever had. But even that, it seems like there would have to be more of a reason as to why she would name this child someone who will cause pain. Maybe her life was such that she perceived that adding another child to her family was going to cause her distress throughout her life. Maybe it was going to be a great hardship or difficulty. Maybe she was having financial problems and she was thinking at that time, the last thing I need is another mouth to feed, another young one to take care of, to get clothes for, and all that kind of stuff. Maybe something had happened with Jabez's father. Maybe he had died during her pregnancy or left them or something like that. These are only speculations. We aren't told much about Jabez's family. We don't know anything about his family life. But certainly there was more motivation to naming her son such a name than just the pain experienced at childbirth. We read that Jabez was more honorable than his brothers. So, you know, possibly, maybe his brothers had caused so much pain and misery in his mother's life that she thought, "Here we go again. It's just another young boy, and these young boys are just, they're going to be the death of me." You know, maybe, Carolyn, you're shaking your head an awful lot. Well, maybe she just through experience thought it's going to be the same story again. I'm going to have to go through this. Whatever the case, Jabez probably did not have an easy life. Can you imagine growing up with a name that literally means this boy's going to cause you pain? You know, you can imagine going to one of your friends and saying, hey, can your son play with my son who's going to cause him a lot of pain? Would you like to hire my son who's going to cause you a lot of pain? Would you like to marry my son who's going to cause you a lot of pain? You know, in the Middle Eastern, a name meant a lot. A lot of times it foretold your destiny, and parents wouldn't name their kids something like, this one's going to cause you a lot of pain, because it would have an influence on his whole life. We see that God changed the name of Abram to Abraham, and his wife Sarai to Sarah. Names had meanings. Names meant something, and it was very accepted in a culture that your name foretold who you were going to be or what you were going to be like. So a person's life could be determined by their name. People would have expected Jabez to be a perpetual source of pain. And let's not forget also, what was his family life like? I can only imagine that the situation must have been pretty bad if the mother's first thought when her newborn baby was born was that it was going to cause her a lot of pain. So his home life probably wasn't the best. And at the very least, his name would have been a reminder that maybe his mother just didn't want him. But Jabez didn't let all that hold him back. He realized that there was only one way out of a nowhere, hopeless life. Jabez turned to God. He went to God and asked that his circumstances and his future could be better. He made God his partner in life. The first thing we learn about Jabez is that he was more honorable than his brothers. We're not told much about his brothers. We don't know what that means. But we can take some speculation there. But it takes a long time to get a reputation as honorable. Especially if your family name's already been tarnished. You know, if you have a neighbor and all their kids are bad, you're not going to look at one of them and think, oh, that's probably a good one. You're going to think the same thing. This is going to be another trouble coming from that house next door. So if your name's already like tarnished, then Jabez would have had to work extremely hard to have an honorable reputation. So realize that this story of Jabez, although only two verses long, we just read the whole thing, it probably covers decades of time from his birth until he was blessed mightily by God. Jabez was part of the covenant nation of Israel, and he called on the nation's God, the one true God that he knew could help him. He probably had grown up hearing stories of how God had delivered Israel and the wonderful things that God had done for the nation of Israel, and he knew that God could take care of his people. And we all know God can take care of his people, but Jabez, I would say, went a step further than just knowing. He believed. He believed that God could take care of him, and he had faith. He had faith that God would take care of him. Let's turn over to Psalms 50 and verse 15. Psalm 50 and verse 15. We have to develop this faith and trust in God that no matter what we're going through, He can get us through it. Psalm 50 and verse 15 says, call upon me in the day of trouble. I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. What's God saying? He says, if you're in trouble, you call on me, and I will deliver you. This is God speaking to his people here. We're all faced with trials and difficult times, and we need to realize we need to turn to the one who can help us. We can spend so much time and energy on our own trying to solve our problems, trying to fix things, trying to change people. And if we're not going to God and making God a part of that process, we're just wasting our energy. So much of our effort is just in vain. David had many times in his life when he felt that the odds were against him. Let's read about one of those times, Psalm 18. Psalm chapter 18, we'll be reading verses 1 through 6. Psalm 18, verse 1, this is to the chief musician, a psalm of David, the servant of the Lord, who spoke to the Lord the words of this song on the day the Lord delivered him from the hand of all his enemies and from the hand of Saul. So that's setting this up. This is a song David wrote. These are the words David said to God when he felt very hopeless. This is when God had delivered him. And David sets up the story here of why he felt so hopeless. Verse 1, and he said, I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. David knew who God was. He knew what power God had. Verse 3, I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. The pangs of death surrounded me, and the floods of ungodliness made me afraid. This is where David is when God came to him. He was afraid. He had death all around him. Verse 5, the sorrows of Sheol surrounded me. The snares of death confronted me. Verse 6, he says, in my distress I called upon the Lord and cried out to my God, and he heard my voice from his temple, and my cry came before him even to his ears. Doesn't matter what situation David was in or how he was feared or what was coming after him, God was there and God heard what he said. The chapter goes on. David talks about God delivering him. He was delivered by the hand of God. This is the attitude that Jabez had. Jabez knew his life was not headed in the best direction, probably wasn't in the best place when he prayed this prayer. But he had problems and he called out to God. And he called out with great passion. He wanted God to know, I mean this. Let's go back to 1 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 10. We're going to go through this prayer that Jabez prayed. We've had a little setup here about what his life was maybe like. Let's go back and look at this prayer that he prayed. 1 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 10. We're going to take it through in parts. The first thing that we notice here, he says, 1 Chronicles 4 and verse 10, he says, Jabez called on the name of the called on the God of Israel, saying, oh, that you would bless me indeed. This is what how he started his prayer. And he's calling out with great passion. You know, it's good. Oh, that you would bless me indeed. One commentary states that by adding the word indeed, that's the equivalent of us adding 4 or 5 exclamation points to a sentence. He's crying out. He's letting God know, I am asking you for something. He's expressing a great desire. I was glad to hear Mr. Brewer's sermonette today about blessings. Jabez was praying for blessings. How do you feel about praying for blessings for yourself? Do you think we're wasting God's time? I hope not. Jabez was asking to be really, truly blessed. And he knew God could do it. Do we earnestly ask for our blessings? We should. That was the message that Jesus gave in Matthew 7. Let's turn back to Matthew 7. Matthew 7, we'll be reading verses 7 through 11. Sometimes we might not think that we need to go to God and ask Him for blessing. We all know we're blessed by God. We know that. But we can ask for more. It's not wrong or it's not selfish. You remember the relationship we have with God. He's our Father. Don't you want to give things to your children? Matthew 7, starting in verse 7, it says, this is Christ speaking, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. Or what man is there among you, if his son asks for bread, would give him a stone? Or if the son asks for a fish, will you give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father, who is in heaven, give good things to those who ask? And you can say, well, you know, this is talking about food and drink. Didn't Christ also tell us not to worry about that kind of stuff? Doesn't mean we can't ask for it, of course. But He said don't worry about that kind of stuff. If we're doing our part, if we're growing our relationship with God and seeking His kingdom, He's going to give us food, clothing, shelter. Christ is saying, come and ask for what you want. Ask for blessings. So are we missing out on blessings because we don't ask for them? Of course, it's all in the attitude. We're going to see some of Jabez's attitude here as we go back through his prayer. What blessings do we want? And why? Why do we ask God for things? You might say, yeah, I ask God for blessings all the time. I tell Him, God, please give me $1 million. I don't want to work anymore. It might not be the right attitude. It'd be better if we prayed for a good income and better financial management, that we can help others, that we can help spread the word, that we can do things that God can work through us. We can be of more use. Jabez, being an honorable person, was most likely a service-oriented person. Yeah, he was asking for blessings, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We just read the words of Christ saying to do it. But he was probably asking for blessings for the benefit of others, not just himself. Of course, he would benefit from it. But I'll bet some of his motivation was, what can I do for other people? Surely, if he would have had the wrong attitudes for asking all these blessings, God would not have granted it. But we're told God granted what he asked. James 4, starting in verse 1. James 4, verses 1 through 3. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come for your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and you do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. Imagine that. People going to wars and fighting, and all they had to do was ask. All they had to do was build this relationship with God and ask Him for these things. They didn't have to go fight and have a war. Verse 3 says, you ask and you don't receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. Do we ask amiss or wrongly, wrong reasons? God wants us to pray to Him not just for our needs, but our desires also. He wants to know what are our desires. Can you imagine someday talking to God, saying, you know what, I've always wanted a new car and I never had a new car. And God says, you didn't ask. Is it, you know, are we missing out on blessings because we don't ask? The fact that God gave Jabez all he prayed for tells us he asked the right attitude. He had the right purpose for these blessings he was asking. So the first thing we see here that Jabez prayed for was to enlarge his territory. He asked God to enlarge his territory. Now, at first it may seem that Jabez's desire was for land and wealth and influence and power over people. It's very possible and likely that he was talking about physical wealth, physical expansion. You know, he may have lived in a place that was unsuitable for helping, for doing the work of God, for helping his neighbor, for showing love and having them in and feeding him and stuff like that. He may have wanted to recover a squandered inheritance. You know, his brothers, as we saw, didn't have very much honor. Maybe they had lost their inheritance or something through gambling or some other thing. And maybe he was asking God to give it back to his family even. It's not wrong to ask God for wealth. Just remember that us having wealth is much more important to us than it is to God. God doesn't have to have us be wealthy for us to have the things that we need, but it's not wrong for us to ask for it. God gives us a plan how to live, right? He gives us financial plans. He gives us a way to life. It's all leading towards success, whether it's just success in life, in relationships, or finances. God's way leads to success. And maybe sometimes praying for wealth is asking God, help me to do better with what you've already given me. So we can ask for a physical enlargement of our territory. We can ask God to increase our wealth, to help us with what he's given us. But what about spiritually? Is there a spiritual part of this? How much would you like to see growth in our congregation? Wouldn't that be great? What is your sphere of influence? How many people do you come in contact with every day? How many people do you set an example to? You know, God can use you to grow his congregation. He can use you by exposing you to more people. Have you ever asked God to let you be a bigger example to those around you? To reach out to more people? Let's turn over to Matthew 5, starting in verse 13. You know, it's a work of the church to grow, to get the word out. And it's God's prerogative whom he's going to call. But we can be a help to that. Matthew 5, verse 13 through 16. Jesus Christ speaking says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how will it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are a light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." What kind of an example are we setting in our sphere of influence? Is God going to let us be a bigger example if we're not setting a good example? Do our works glorify God? Do people look at you and see attributes of God the Father? And we have roughly 50 people here in attendance usually. We're a little bit light today. I hope it's not illness, but we're normally around 50 people. And if everyone in our room went out and demonstrated what God's life looked like to just two people throughout this week, that would be 100 people that would be influenced by you and your actions. Is God going to call them? I don't know. That's up to him. But it's not our job to go out and drag them. Come with me. You fit in good at my church. That's God's calling. But we can help by setting a good example. Just as, you know, we can hurt by setting a poor example. People we work with, they may come in contact with the United Church of God website one day. And they might be reading this. They might be thinking, wow, this seems like a good group. And then they might find out you go here, and they might be like, whoa, wait a minute. Maybe this isn't such a good group. What example are we setting in our sphere of influence? We want to set the right example. We want to ask God to expand our sphere of influence. Help us to do whatever He wants to use us for. We will only be helpful if our conduct stands out among those that God places us around. 1 Peter 2, verse 11. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. I love how this verse starts out. It says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, I beg you, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." Could you imagine your good works causing someone to glorify God? That's the influence we can have. So this request for an enlargement of his territory, it could have been a literal request for land, and it probably was. But it also, it could have been a request to extend his influence for God. He could have been looking for an opportunity to spread hope and faith in God. We should be asking God for that. This is becoming a more and more hopeless world all the time, and a more and more faithless world for sure. Let's ask God that we can spread hope and faith. Interestingly, the name Jabez appears only one other time in Scripture, and that is in 1 Chronicles 2, verse 55. And it's mentioned as the name of a place where the scribes dwell. 1 Chronicles 2 and verse 55. 1 Chronicles 2 and verse 55, "And the families of the scribes who dwelt at Jabez were there, the Terahites, the Shemaiahites, and the Sukahites. These were the Kenites who came from Hamath, the father of the house of Rechab." A city by the name of Jabez. It could be that Jabez obtained this land through God answering his prayer. And then he apparently used it in God's service. That's where the scribes lived. Can you imagine that? He asked for an enlargement of his territory and ended up with a city. That really shouldn't be that surprising to us. How many times have we gone to God and asked Him for something? Maybe like at the time when David, you know, you felt like, oh, this is it. I need help now. Or maybe just you had something that you wanted and you went to God and you asked Him for a blessing. How many times has that answered prayer been 1,000 times better than what you expected? The solution to a problem, so phenomenal, you can't even imagine. You know it was from God. It's very possible the city of Jabez was a part of the blessing that God gave him. The next thing he prayed for was that God's hand would be with him. His prayer request is that God's hand would be with him. God's hand, or the hand of the Lord, is often used in a biblical term for God's power and his presence among his people. The success of the early church was attributed to the hand of the Lord being with them. Let's turn over to Acts chapter 11. Acts chapter 11, starting in verse 19. Acts 11, verse 19. Now those who were scattered after the persecution that arose over Stephen traveled as far as Phoenicia, Cyprus, and Antioch, preaching the word to no one but the Jews only. Verse 20. But some of them were men from Cyprus and Cyrene, who, when they had come to Antioch, spoke to the Hellenists, preaching the Lord Jesus. And the hand of the Lord was with them, and a great number believed and turned to the Lord. Here's this hand of the Lord, this power of God, was with the early church, converted people. Jabez recognized he was going to need help. He asked for great blessings and influence, and if God was going to grant him what he had asked for, he wanted to make sure he did it right. He wanted God to be a part of it. He realized his total dependence on God. He probably wanted to be careful not to make the same mistakes as his forefathers. As I said, he probably grew up hearing the stories of God leading Israel out of Egypt, taking them into the promised land. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy 8, verse 11. Deuteronomy 8, verse 11, God warned ancient Israel not to forget him, not to think that all these blessings they were getting ready to partake of came from the might of their hands. All the armies that they overthrew to get there was because of anything they did, but that they were blessings from God. Deuteronomy 8, verse 11, God says, beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. So he's like, you're going to get there and you're going to be so blessed. Don't forget how you got there. And because what do we do when we get blessed? You get lax. And then they said, you're going to forget about my commandments and my judgments and my statutes. Don't do that. Verse 12. He goes on and says, lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and your gold are multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, God's giving them a direction here of that he's taking them. He says, you're going to have great success. You're going to have great wealth. All of your stuff is going to be multiplied. Verse 14, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. So he says, you're going to a great place. Don't forget where you came from. You were slaves in another land. And I brought you out. Verse 15, don't forget who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and in a thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and might test you to do you good in the end. All that testing, all those hard times they had was to do them good in the end, to help them have this reliance on God, to realize we would have never made it through that desert without water. And God brought water out of a rock. Who among them could take credit for that? So all this was done for their good in the end. In verse 17, God says, then you will say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gained me this wealth. Everyone remembers God when times are hard, when we're in trouble, when our back's up against the wall, when we don't know how we're going to make the things that we have to get done. How are we going to do that? Where's our income going to come from? Where's our food going to come from? We all remember God when things are hard. We need to be careful that we remember God when things are good, when our life seems to be just going the way we want it to go, and we're blessed just financially and socially and everything, all these blessings that we can have, that's the time we need to be careful and not forget God. Jabez realized his total dependence on God and wanted God to be a part of his life at all times. He knew if God was going to give him these great blessings, he wanted to make sure he did not make the same mistakes that ancient Israel made and cut God out. And we all know they did that several times. They would start making idols or turning to other gods and doing other things, getting away from God when times were good for them. And God would have to make things hard for them again. And then they would realize and they would come back. And this happened, this repeated over and over and over. Jabez did not want this life. He didn't want to have a cycle of good, bad, good, bad. He just wanted to have good. So he made God a part of it. The next thing Jabez prayed for is that God would keep him from evil. One thing about success, it brings a bigger opportunity for failure. It's when we experience great success that we start to overvalue our strengths. We should always be mindful of the need for God's protection. There's something that we should never take for granted. We have an enemy. We each have a real enemy. And it wants to destroy us, especially if we're trying to live according to God's way of life and we're having success with it. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, we read, you don't have to turn there, I'll read it to you. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, it says, "Be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour." Your adversary, the devil. You have an adversary. We know Satan's trying to destroy all of mankind. He's trying to destroy God's plan. He's trying to do everything he can to destroy families, relationships, and anything that's positive or good. But do we personalize it? Do we realize Satan is after us? Each one of us. Satan intensely wants to destroy you. He is your adversary, your enemy. Jesus' instruction to us on prayer is to pray that God would deliver us from the evil one. Jabez's prayer was that God would keep him from evil. Just keep him from it completely. Because he understood that the best way not to lose a fight was to not even get in that arena. What level are you trying to avoid evil in your life? Ask God to protect you from the evil forces and circumstances that would harm you and your relationships. Your relationships with your family, your relationship with God. We need God's protection. The last thing that Jabez prayed for was that he would not cause pain. He did not want to be a source of pain for others. Remember, he had gone his whole life with a name that meant he was going to cause pain. His whole life, that's how he either was introduced or had to introduce himself. "Hi, I'm going to cause you pain." That was his name. "I am going to cause you pain." Jabez did not want his name to define who he was, so his request was that he would not cause pain. This request helps us to understand what kind of a man Jabez was. He was genuinely concerned for others. Jabez lived a life of love. A life of love. Romans 13, verse 8. Romans 13 and verse 8, "Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in the saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does not harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. This is what Jabez wanted. He wanted to cause harm to no one. He loved everyone. We see very clearly, love does not harm. He did not want to be a source of pain, as his name suggested that he would. This is the attitude that we as Christians should all have. We don't want to cause pain. It doesn't matter what someone's political view is, or someone's sociology, whatever view, you wear a mask, don't wear a mask. It doesn't matter. We should not be trying to cause pain to anyone. We should not be trying to cause pain within our own homes. Brothers, sisters, husbands, wives. We should not want to harm anyone. Are we being careful to fulfill this law of love? Are we loving others as we love ourselves? We all love ourselves. The account of Jabez in 1 Chronicles concludes by saying that God granted him what he requested. Some have taken that to mean that this is some sort of a path to wealth. That simply praying this prayer would bring you great blessings. There was a book written about 20 years ago or so talking about, you know, this unlocked all these blessings. Just this prayer is what you have to do. This is not a hidden magic prayer that God snuck in here and if you found it, then you were going to be blessed. God doesn't want us to just repeat someone else's prayer. You know, what did Christ say in Matthew 6 and verse 7? Matthew 6 and verse 7, when he's teaching how to pray, he says, when you do pray, don't use vain repetitions as the heathen do, for they think they will be heard for their many words. Does God want to hear us just keep praying Jabez's prayer over and over again? This prayer is a definition of who Jabez was. It's a desperate, heartfelt prayer for great blessings and a changed, hope-filled life. Jabez is a relatively unknown person. He wasn't a Moses or an Aaron. We don't read any stories of him turning the world of his time upside down and doing great things. He was just a person who had a rough start to his life. He prayed to God and asked that things could be better. He asked for blessings that had a purpose, and his life ended extraordinarily well. Let's conclude by once again reading the story of Jabez, 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. Now Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, because I bore him in pain. And Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, oh, that you would bless me indeed, enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me, and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain. So God granted him what he requested. We don't need to pray Jabez's prayer. That was Jabez's prayer. That was probably a summation of prayers that Jabez had over his life of certain themes that he wanted for his life. It's not a matter of saying the right words, but having the right heart or character. Jabez's prayer isn't for us to say. Our heartfelt prayers can have the same results if we have the right heart.